There are so many great things happening in the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis.
It's like in the Book of Esther. God has placed each of us in this local church for a time like this.
We're just all people of God.
You know, we're all human. We're all fallen. We're all sinners.
I think we put on Christ, we put on love.
Put on Christ with us as we learn to witness in new ways, find inspiration in those around us, and look for guidance from the Holy Spirit, our Holy Mother Church, and the shepherds of our local church.
Because we're all on a journey.
Continue this journey with us now with another episode of Practicing Catholic.
Welcome to Practicing Catholic. I'm Leah Hazelton.
And I'm Father Tom Margavichus. And those listeners who are fortunate enough to be hearing us on Friday evening, February 6th.
You guys should definitely go to relevantradio.com and consider donating to their pledge drive.
Because that is happening on right now. Now, those who are not listening on that particular evening, you might be listening on Saturday or Sunday, or you might even be on the podcast later on. Yeah, you missed the pledge week, but you can still go to relevantradio.com and pledge. And why should they?
Because Relevant Radio, thankfully, helps us produce this local radio show and just continually brings Catholic content and great shows and guests, especially the shows The Inner Life and Daybreak with Patrick Connolly and Paul Sadek. Just some great shows and great content.
Now, you're a local gal.
Mm-hmm.
New Market.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, right. And so you're living in the area that can get the signal of 1330 AM.
Yes, yes.
Down where you live. And so people just like you listening locally, why would it matter to them whether they can hear this show?
Mm-hmm. It is just so great that we get to have a local program produced in our local archdiocese with people that are from here and know and love and serve Jesus here. And I think it's just an inspiration to be able to hear all those stories of people here living out the gospel call.
Yeah, because sometimes, you know, you get these Catholic media superstars, the Father Mike Schmitz and the Bishop Robert Barron, and you love their excellent programming and their content, Patrick Madrid, and oh, sure, all the stuff that you can get on the internet with clicks of a few buttons, but sometimes that feels distant. It feels like it's electronically out there, but does anyone in my own backyard have anything going on that might be of interest to me? And that's exactly where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
You're the local gal on the local radio show.
Wow.
You know, and I've been here for 40 years now here in the Twin Cities.
I think you're a local now.
I call myself a local, even though I didn't grow up here. I do love being here, and I love what we got going in the local church.
Mm-hmm.
Because God is at work, sure, in these great international venues, but he's also at work right here.
Yes,
right in our own, you know, this is precisely why our show, Practicing Catholic, wants to ask the locals, hey, who are you? Yeah, we could probably try harder to get the big names. And, you know, and you know, we did have Father Richard Kunst from Duluth. That's not that far away a drive, you know. But mostly we're just with people right in our own backyard. So God is at work in your soul. And if that's true for you locally, then a lot of local listeners would benefit from knowing that too.
Mm-hmm. Now, Father, you have been here for 40 years, you said.
Yeah.
And you had that call to become a priest. Was it kind of like a call within the call to become a priest here within the Archdiocese?
I thought about being a priest when I was a little kid growing up, even before I was in kindergarten. I used to love to sit in the front pew of the church and watch the priest and imitate his movements. And Mom tells me, I don't remember this, but when I came home from school once in second grade, I said, Mom, I'm going to be a priest someday. And Mom would just love to tell me that. So I thought about it way back when I was living back in Cleveland, Ohio area. And then I kind of got derailed from my vocational trajectory. I wanted to serve the Lord. And I came to Minnesota when I found out about Net Ministries and then St. Paul's Outreach. But only after living here in the Twin Cities for several years was the opportunity to re-examine my own vocation presented to me. And that's why I became a priest here in the Twin Cities, because God is at work locally, and I was aware of that and was able to respond.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks for sharing that, Father.
Yeah, yeah.
Our guests this week are Sister Amelia from the Nashville Dominicans, who is here in the Twin Cities. She serves at Providence Academy, and she'll be talking about her vocation, what led her from a life without faith to a life with faith. And then we also have another clergyman, Father Jim Livingston, who will be talking about the Third Order Carmelites, which it's kind of like he's a priest, so like that vocation is his first call, but it made me think of Mother Teresa saying that she had a call within a call to start her own order.
Both of them discern, what is God wanting from me, and how can I respond right here in the local community?
When people hear religious order, they often think of monks or nuns, but there's a spiritual path meant for everyday life. Today we're talking about the Third Order Carmelites, a way of prayer and contemplation lived in the world. Joining us is Father Jim Livingston, pastor of St. Paul's Catholic Church in Ham Lake and spiritual assistant to the Our Lady of the Most Sacred Heart Carmelite Community in Deep Haven. Father Jim, welcome back on the show.
Thank you. It's good to be back with you.
Yeah, it was just a few weeks ago that we had other material we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Can you start by telling us like what the Carmelite Order is, when it was founded, and how it came to Minnesota, if you know any of that?
Well, you got me there, but on the Minnesota angle. But the Carmelite was founded originally. The original Carmelite charism began when Europe tried to get back into the Holy Land around the time of the Crusades. You had some hermits that kind of hung out on Mount Carmel. They were fascinated by Elijah, the prophet. And they also had a great affection for Mary, seeing her as a contemplative ideal, and also Elijah as a kind of a prophetic witness. There was the Bishop of Jerusalem in those days, Albert, created the rule of life for them, which lasted for a long, long time. And after the Europeans were kicked out of the Holy Land again, they began to form communities in Europe. And so it spread throughout Europe. This is the time, roughly, you think of St. Francis and the Franciscans, St. Dominic and the Dominicans, and the Carmelites really never had a historic figure, outside of the Bible figures that they considered their founder or foundress. So they really began to consider that Mary was the spiritual founder of the Carmelite charism, if you will. Then along comes the 16th century, or the 1500s, and a great figure called Teresa of Avila, or Teresa of Jesus, as she was known in Carmel. She was a Spanish Carmelite religious sister who had this calling, this urge to go back to the original charism of, really contemplative prayer, and kind of get rid of all the distractions. She had a really hard time starting, but she had her own life story is fascinating. With the help of John of the Cross, another Spanish, Carmelite guy looking for this sort of authentic, Carmelite spirituality, they tried to reform the Carmelite order. And I'm afraid to say they failed. The Carmelite order actually split in two. So her version of the Carmelite order is now called the Discalced, which kind of means shoeless, if you will, really primitive and penitential. And the other Carmelite group, I think, is just called the Order of Carmels or OCARM. So really there's two juridical Carmelite families, one of which was founded by Teresa of Avila, or Teresa of Jesus. And so that's sometimes called the Theresian Carmel. And that happens to be the branch that I belong to. Carmelites, along with all the other orders, you know, when the New World was discovered, they had their time of discernment and debate as to whether, you know, their prayerful hermetic, you know, hermitage type calling was a calling to go into the New World. Of course, eventually they did. They were not as prominent as the Franciscans here in the United States. But here's where I kind of lack in the history of it. I don't know exactly how we got into Minnesota, but we do have our kind of local Carmelite community, and I'm not even sure if they're the same juridical branch as the one that I'm in, is the Discalced, but there's a Lake Elmo presence of brothers and priests and hermits there, as well as the religious sisters there. So that's kind of in a nutshell the story.
So if Saint Teresa was trying to restore some of the primitive original austerity, I would imagine living that way would be difficult for several people, especially people already immersed in the world.
You know, it's all kind of relative. You know, when you think of being immersed in the world, I mean, you and I and all of us were really immersed in the world. Teresa was a cloistered, well, she was in a convent, I mean, and yet she considered herself getting too immersed in the world too. She had a beautiful personality, which was drawn to friendships. I mean, she could make friends with all kinds of people. And she was a very popular, you know, person. And people loved to go and chat with her in the speak room. And she enjoyed that too, you know. But at a certain point, she realized, well, you know, why did I give myself to the Lord if I spent all much this time, you know, chatting about trivialities with people? She felt that she wanted to make a lifestyle that was really in friendship with Jesus instead of making friends. I mean, she made friends easily, but she felt that, and this was the time of the Protestant Reformation. We call it the Reformation, but in those days it was considered a huge scandal and a splitting apart of the Catholic world. And so she felt that her calling was to, if Jesus is losing all these friends, she wants to be a friend of Jesus. And so that's really what motivated her.
Okay, but you still haven't told us, well, maybe we haven't directly asked, Third Order, what the heck does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Third Order means, it's a reference to first you got the priests, and then you got the sisters, and then you got the lay people. Okay, so Third Order is that branch of the Carmelite family that actually includes the laity. And I, as a secular priest, as a diocesan priest, fit in that category. I'm a priest first and then a Carmelite after the fact. So the secular, technically it's called the secular order, but many people call it a third order. And it's actually juridically part of the Carmelite family. It's not a separate jurisdiction I'm not the expert on canon law, but it's part of the same juridical person of the Carmelite order. But the same charism of Carmel is lived out in the different circumstance of life for people who live in the world, and not so much in a community of a monastic community or a community in a convent. So that's what Third Order means.
Why do you think that being a Third Order member of the Carmelite community could be appealing to lay people?
I think many people are attracted to Carmel because they feel drawn to prayer. Some people, I think, are attracted because they're shy and they love the Lord, but they don't want all this community business. Ironically, ironically, the Third Order Carmelite actually requires a life in community, because we have monthly meetings, and that's a we pray together, and then have community business and socialize together. So and then, you know, a lot of the formation time is spent around a round table, you know, where we share faith together. But so ideally, there is some people will just, you know, they'll discover the Carmelite saints, and that's a big attraction. They discover Therese, the little flower. They discover Teresa and the interior castles, which is very famous. And they discover John of the Cross and the Song of Songs and all the rest of the Dark Knight and all that. And there's something about what they say in their writings which really touches their hearts. And with that, they will they'll start asking around. You know, for me, myself, I was attracted to Mary, and that's what got me involved. I didn't really know about Teresa of Avila, John of the Cross, the others, until I had gotten into the group. But for me, the Marian ideal was, I just felt that she was a very significant part of my spiritual life. And I discovered that there was a group that kind of talked about Mary. And so that's what attracted me.
For lay members of the Third Order, what does it look like to be part of the community? As a priest, you have to pray the Liturgy of the Hours every day already. So you're kind of used to like these ways of prayer. What does it look like for lay people other than these monthly meetings?
Well, the interesting thing for me is that the kind of the standard spiritual practice of a Third Order Carmelite is essentially the same as for a diocesan priest. So it really fit well, really well in with the lifestyle that God had called me to as a priest. So the standard practice is a quiet, what they call mental prayer or silent prayer or interior prayer, 30 minutes a day, and also spiritual reading, 30 minutes a day. So the two of them feed each other. And then frequent confession and daily mass, if it's possible, you know, and of course, as a priest, it's pretty possible. and then we do have our monthly gathering, monthly meeting, where we have prayer together and formation together. In addition to those outward observances, we have a devotion to the rosary, and then we have a kind of a life that is centered, if you will, on the spirit of the Beatitudes, and then a life that is also drawn towards what's called the evangelical counsels, which basically are the spirit of poverty, chastity, and obedience. So if you think of those as sort of benchmarks for a religious life, those benchmarks or charisms, if you will, are lived out in a way that's appropriate for someone who, again, does not live in a monastery or a convent, but lives in an active life in the world.
Mm-hmm. So as a lay member, do you commit to live those? Do you have to take a vow like sisters or brothers do as a Carmelite?
Yeah, so technically we do not take vows, but technically we make promises. And yes, so the promise, the interesting thing is that it's according to our teaching, you're never bound by pain of sin. You're bound by your sense of honor, if you will. Because the pain of sin is for violations of the commandments, if you will. Well, these aren't commandments. These are counsels of the Lord. These are promptings of the Spirit, if you will. Now, you got to take it seriously or else there's no point in it, you know. But yeah, there is a way that someone can take a vow. I think you need some kind of extra special permission to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you and your particular group of folk gather at St. Therese in Deep Haven?
Yeah, that's the group that I'm attached to.
How many other like groups are there in the Twin Cities area?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that. I think there's six or seven Carmelite communities. And I could get a bunch of hate mail for getting that wrong, but
no hate mail to Father Jim, please.
Yeah. But yeah, there's probably six or seven, and then this is where my brain doesn't work as well as some others. But there's the organizational structure of it. We belong to I forget what the name of the cluster is. District. We're in district and district. In that district, there's other districts in the whole province, and then there's different provinces in the country and so on. So we have a Father General who's in Rome, and then we have a delegate who, you know, watches over the secular communities, and then we have a delegate sends a delegate, you know, to us when he comes and makes some visits.
Mm-hmm. So you're the spiritual assistant. What does your role look like as a spiritual assistant?
Yeah, so I have two roles in the community. First, when the community gathers for prayer and formation, I will lead the common prayer. We do liturgy of the hours when we gather together, and we're blessed enough to have a Eucharistic adoration time. And so I'll offer benediction. It's a very, you know, simple requirement. In my earlier days, I did more of the teaching when the community that I was part of was smaller. But actually, the role of the spiritual director is not technically there to be a teacher and to lead others in that role. The roles and the duties are supposed to be divided up among the mature members of the group. The other role that I have when the council meets regularly throughout the year, and I am part of the council. I represent the larger order, and I have to be delegated. I was not ordained as a Carmelite priest. I'm a mm-hmm. secular priest, so I have to be delegated by the Carmelite, you know, community. I think it's every 3 years I have to be re-upped on it. And so I represent the Carmelite order in the council meeting as well. I don't have a vote, but I have veto powers. So I can be an obstructionist if I want. That's just technically the way it works. Yeah.
What led you to become a third order member of the Carmelites? I know you mentioned Mary.
Yeah, so as a young adult, I had a reconversion, if you will. I felt drawn. I was kind of a wandering soul, and I came back to the church, came back to the Lord, and I realized very quickly that Mary had a huge part, and I was very drawn to the rosary and drawn to introduction to the, no, not, that's Francis de Sales, the Louis de Montfort consecration to Mary. And I found out that there was this thing called the Carmelites that also appreciated the Rosary and the Mary, and it just sort of fell into my lap, and I was drawn to it, and I met in the early days Father Jerry Dvorak was spiritual guide and director for many of the young people trying to do that, so I met him and just got invited in, and that was. I've been a Carmelite in the Carmelite religious formation longer than I've been a priest. I was already doing that in the seminary. So the communities that I've been part of, I've kind of moved along. The communities sometimes for a while were getting big enough that they had to split off. And, you know, a lot of people were driving in from some faraway place to be part of a community. I was out west a little bit farther in Excelsior, and so I moved over there and then moved to Deep Haven. So it's kind of a long story, but that's how I wound up in Deep Haven when I actually live in Ham Lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, as pastor of St. Paul's in Ham Lake, the parish that is well known as a haven for many charismatic-minded Catholics, it's an interesting juxtaposition to be pastoring a charismatic community, which are known for more exuberant praise and worship, and also being a member of the Third Order of Carmel, who are known for contemplative silence. So there might be people who would say, I could never be a Carmelite because dot, 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 fill in the blank, because I'm too, I like praise and worship music too much in this case, or I can't spend hours and hours alone in prayer. I'd get bored, or, you know, how would you respond that the invitation to Third Order Carmel is not a matter of personality, but goes deeper?
Well, it is a calling, but it's also the fact that contemplative prayers are very joyful and exuberant people, and or can be, and charismatic people also can go very, very deep in their prayer. So there really isn't a contradiction. I think I'm kind of a embodiment of the melding of those two charisms. I always consider myself, if I describe myself spiritually, it's charismatic and contemplative. You know, John Paul II was, you know, a Carmelite and a Third Order. I mean, he was the most active, you know, person around. The two spiritualities, I think, I don't see a contradiction. Yeah.
Mm. In our last few minutes, how can a listener start to incorporate some more of these like Carmelite practices, more contemplative prayer, and learn more about the Third Order Carmelites here in Minnesota?
Well, I think if you're going to try to learn how to pray, I would just say pray, you know, just keep trying, just show up in prayer. A lot of people will be attracted. Go ahead and read The Little Flower, A Story of a Soul. Go ahead and, you know, pick up John of the Cross, and go ahead and pick up Teresa of Avila. And there's other Carmelite saints who have written stuff too. So if you find yourself attracted to that, you know, it could be a sign. If you find yourself drawn to prayer, even if you don't feel like you're good at it, but you just feel like you want to go to pray. And then I anticipated that question. There is a website for which contains the information in the local communities. We're part of what we call the Washington Province, not Washington D.C. I think it's Washington County, and the one that's in Holy Hill, Wisconsin. So if you go to OCDS, that's Order of Carmel Discalced Secular, OCDS Wash Prov. OCDSWashProv.org, and that'll give you some information on the Carmelite in general and the locations of the local communities as well.
Well, thank you very much, Father Jim. It's always nice to meet with you and share some of your insights.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to be with you guys.
Thanks so much, Father. Up next, a journey that began from faith and led somewhere unexpected. Sister Amelia Hewler shares how a quiet pull became a life purpose.
Here's another Relevant Radio miracle moment.
I came out of a homosexual relationship, and I'm now married in the church with three children. And I was just hoping if I could share a little bit of my testimony with you,
sure.
If that's okay.
So you were raised Catholic?
Yes.
Okay.
I just remember distinctly one night I was on my knees and I said, God, I love this woman. I want to marry her. Mm-hmm. And then I just heard him tell me that he loves her so much more than I ever could, and that he loves me so much more than I ever could. And if I just let go, he would take care of me. And I let go, and he took such good care of me. And if I could just encourage people to speak the truth, the truth of the church is what saved me. And I just want people to know that, even if they don't feel it right now, that they can trust this wisdom of the church.
Touch a heart and change a soul by donating to Relevant Radio today.
What happens when someone who didn't grow up religious finds herself drawn slowly and unexpectedly towards faith and then towards religious life? That story belongs to our guest today, Sister Amelia of the Dominican Sisters of St. Cecilia, who's with us to talk about calling, transformation, and the kind of impact that doesn't always make headlines, but changes people all the same. Sister, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Leah. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks for tuning in at Providence Academy, where you are a teacher, and it's just going to be me interviewing you for this episode. Father Tom is unavailable. But could you tell us a little bit more about your background? Where are you from? How'd you become religious if you didn't grow up religious?
Mm-hmm. So the short answer of how to become religious, God. Because the seventh graders know that they can always get it right if they say God. That's actually always not always the right answer, is it? No, but the short of it would be I'm actually from Stillwater, Minnesota. So how often do we get to serve near or in our hometown? So that's been wonderful. And for my first 2 years at Providence, I lived at our beautiful convent with our sisters in Stillwater. So it was fun to be in my hometown. And I come from a family that is just fantastic and so full of love and call me on in so many ways. But my parents, being the good, honest people they are, the time that they married and raised us, they didn't have a faith that in truth they could pass on. But they were true to their word in wanting to support us if we were interested. So both of my parents in their own ways would either drop me off at my friend's confirmation class or if I also wanted to skip school like some of my friends that got to go on religious release, they would let me go. And when I was 12, I started babysitting for a family and I was just a kid, but their example, they're Catholic, that sat on my back burner. And as I got older, I would ask the parents more pointed questions. And as a teenager, you're trying to figure out your place in the world. And I would ask them more questions. And then I went to South America when I was a junior to live abroad. And I encountered some young women in particular that just really had a purity about them. And I wanted it. And I thought it had something to do with that lady they liked so much, that lady that they thought was the mother of God. And that's kind of all I knew about her. I'd seen a statue at my grandma's house that came out at Christmas, and I knew that grandma thought that was the mother of God. But even at 16, 17, that's all I could have said about her. And our good priest at that school where I was an exchange student gave me a miraculous medal, cheap little plastic, the one that you can buy 400 of and give them to every kid, and it's okay if they lose it. But he blessed it, and it was the first sacramental I ever held. And I wore it because I thought, I think she's the reason that some of these young women are so beautiful. And from there was college and then lots of questions and then entering the church.
Hmm. So where did you go to college?
So I went to the George Washington University, so go Buff and Blue, in D.C. And I picked it for two reasons. One, I wanted an international affairs program, not just a major, because I was trying to avoid math and science. I know, but I also really wanted to dive into this. So I went to their Elliott School of International Affairs. And I also wanted a school that had a good rowing program. I'd been a swimmer in high school, never a standout. But had always wanted to be a rower, and I had seen enough evidence that swimmers made good rowers. Mm-hmm. So I was a walk-on.
That's awesome. So what year did you join the church then?
So I joined the church 2 years after college in 2005.
Okay, and then I know you took your final vows in 2013.
2013.
What led you to the Dominicans?
Oh, what a good question. Okay, I think the most honest answer I can give you is the kids I grew up babysitting for. I didn't realize it at the time, but every time they said, hey, there's these nuns that teach at our school now, because our sisters came while I was away in college. Every time they said, you remind me of them. Every time they said, Sister Mary Rachel played hacky sack with me at recess. Every time Patty said, oh, they're so full of joy. I just filed it away, I think. And as I joined the young adults group at the cathedral, and as I met friends who were practicing their faith, I followed them to these different orders to serve with Mother Teresa's sisters, to serve with Little Sisters of the Poor, to meet other orders. And I definitely had other preferences of how I wanted to see the stage of my life, the movie to present to the world. But when I visited Nashville, it was wonderful and annoying. It was wonderful because I loved it, and annoying because it felt normal. And I realized, oh, it's actually, for me, now everyone has their own story, it wasn't something sensational. It was, yeah, and this is where God will continue to grow me into the woman I've called to be. So I fought with the Lord a little bit because I had some other preferences for a while. And very quickly, he transformed my heart. And I knew that Nashville was where I was called to continue growing into the woman he wanted me to be.
So you mentioned a little bit that you had to wrestle with God about that decision a little bit. What about that time changed your heart, I guess?
What a great question. So I was blessed to be surrounded by so many good priests. And I think in a lot of sisters' stories, if not all, there is a priest that really saw something in them and helped to nurture and guide. So I was meeting regularly with a couple different priests, and one said to me, you know, your life of prayer is so young. And he said, and God is going to want to work really fast in you. So we need to make sure you're giving him that space. And he suggested a little rhythm of prayer. And then he said, at the consecration, as the priest elevates our Lord, say, Lord, let me want what you want me to want. Let me love who you want me to love. And that's a really powerful prayer. I had learned a little bit about St. Catherine of Siena. I didn't know a ton about saints, but I knew she had a mystical exchange of hearts. And I understood his prayer that he was advising me to pray at Mass every day. I understood it to be like a replacement prayer. Like, give me your heart, Lord. Give me your heart of flesh in place of my stony heart.
So I'm thinking back to your conversion. You didn't grow up with faith. And me being a cradle Catholic, it's kind of hard to like imagine you like coming to that space and like that movement. What was that like for you?
Okay, your questions are excellent. I hope it doesn't sound trite to say that I don't think it's that different than anyone else's. Because a relationship with the Lord is so personal. And, I'm in my 40s, and in one way that's really old, and in another way it's still really young in the life of faith. He's always just moving us to new and deeper places with him. So yeah, there was a sense in which there was kind of a rush job at a certain point in my life, whereas for a cradle Catholic, they might suggest that they've known him all along. But even so, the him that you know at 10 is not the same as 15, at 20. Mm-hmm. And thank God for that, because he's stretching us to receive the vision of him.
Mm-hmm. You became a Catholic in 2005, and then what year did you join the Dominicans, and what is that process of becoming a sister like? I have a friend actually that is in the Nashville Dominicans as well. She's in her apostolic year. So I hear about it from her a little bit when I get one letter from her a year. So
so good. So I, it's usually about 2 years, or it could be longer, when people kind of start working with the community and reaching out and asking, but especially those new converts, right? Mm-hmm. So I had been in touch with our sisters actually over a year prior to me becoming Catholic. So I knew them pretty well. They knew me pretty well, because that discernment is two-sided, right? Like, yes. Do I think God wants me here? And then on the part of the community, do we think that that woman is called to be here? Will she thrive? Will she flourish? So I made a few visits to Nashville, but mostly my interaction was with the sisters in Stillwater. You know, I understand now even more how gracious they were in making time for me. You know, teaching isn't the hardest job out there in one way. Like, we have very secure weekends. We have good ending hours to the work we do. But at the same time, it is exhausting. And yet I got to join them after school for Vespers, or they opened up their Saturday or their Sunday to me. And I realize now just how generous they were. So I got to know them in Stillwater, also visited Nashville. I did enter as a postulant, which is like a first year sister who is asking the question, postulating, in 2006. And then at the time that I was in the novitiate house, we had a one-year novice year where those are the sisters with the white veils, and they have not made vows yet, but they are studying the church's documents, just the beautiful treasury the church has given us on what is religious life. They have extra time for prayer. And part of that is, yes, to know God's will, but it's also to cultivate in that young woman a desire for a personal prayer life. So that once she's out on mission, like we are now, those of us that are finally vowed, yes, I'm at community prayers, and yes, that's the core of my day, but I also find those hidden moments of the extra prayer, right? I want to be with him more, above and beyond. So the young novice really gets to cultivate that taste for prayer and to ask the question, are you enough, Lord? Because so many very good human outlets are removed at that point. So to your point, your friend doesn't get to just write you all the time. She's not texting you. I mean, that's a big change from how it was just a couple of years ago. And so there is a pinch, but it begs the question, Lord, are you enough? Are you supplying the grace? And I have a dear friend who's a missionary of charity. And before I became a sister, I said, sister, how did you know? How did you know? And she said, well, I knew that if it wasn't God's calling, I wouldn't be able to do it because it's a life of grace. It's supernatural.
Yeah.
So that's what the young sister is experiencing in those formative years.
Mm-hmm. How did you make peace with that, with this call? It seems like, I know you talked a little bit about how like there was some wrestling and things like that. And time-wise, I love a little timeline and thinking like the order of the way things happen. It seems so fast, but I know like with my friend's discernment and all kinds of discernment, like discerning marriage or anything, there's always like a little bit of something that needs to be reconciled.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of a character in the book, the novel In This House of Breed. She had to learn to abide by the sudden and yet slow work of grace. Mm-hmm. Like, it's both ends. So when I tell the story of the vocation, right, however that story comes out, you hope it's the Holy Spirit, but it's also yourself kind of photoshopping it a bit accidentally. It makes sense. At the time, that's not always the lived experience. It felt slow. It felt confusing. I don't know if that answers your question. What I tell young women is, whatever you're facing in your discernment that is really ruffling your feathers, give it a hug and thank the Lord, because he's giving you a piece of self-knowledge of how you personally respond to tension, to unknown, to challenge. And that's not bad. He made a human being, and that's what you are. But thank him, because what I learned about myself, I already knew I was a little bit impatient, but when I learned how uncomfortable I am when I don't know outcomes, when I can't control outcomes, that has served me so well in my adult years, and especially as a consecrated woman. Mm-hmm. So that time of trial and even a little bit of angst isn't wasted.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it like for your family who weren't religious when you firstly became Catholic, which can be jarring, but then now a consecrated woman?
Oh, I'd love to get them on the show and we could ask them because they would each have their own answer. So from my side of it, watching them watch me, right? My dad was probably the most willing to pose hard questions to me. Mm-hmm. So super supportive, would come with me to the Missionaries of Charity, would go to Mass with me, would go to Midnight Mass with me because I didn't want to be alone. But he would ask me really hard things about doctrine because mm-hmm. he'd been raised Christian and somewhat anti-Catholic, I think you might say. And so... he was willing to ask the hard questions and push me. And he's the one that's in the church right now. And that's interesting. And then my beautiful mom, super supportive also. She saw it was bringing me a joy, a happiness, and she liked that. She told me later that after the Easter Vigil, she was driving home with my brothers. And then I think probably also their girlfriends at the time, they weren't married yet. And she said, your sister is going to be a sister. And my college age brother said, no, she loves children. She would never do that. And apparently my mom said she will. So by the time I became clear enough and worked up enough courage to say, hey, mom, like that weird stunted, stilted voice where you think you're just being casual like that. Hey, mom, I think I'm gonna be a sister. You know, it doesn't come out well at all. And she said, yeah, I know.
Well, moms have a way of knowing, don't they?
They do.
Now, how long have you lived in the Twin Cities then?
now as a sister?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So I came back in the fall, August of 2023, and lived at the Stillwater Convent for these past 2 years. And then August of 2025, this past August, we were so blessed that Mother Anna Grace assigned a second sister here. And she's our first full-time teacher here because owing to the commute, I wasn't. Sister Anne Therese is here teaching second grade, and a beautiful family donated their home, and we opened a new convent out here.
Wow. So what is it like teaching now at Providence Academy?
Oh, I love it. So one of our wonderful teachers had a maternity leave partway through my first year. So I got to put a foot in the door here even back then. And then now I only still just have two classes, but it gives me a good taste of seventh grade life, right? And I was actually just looking at something that kids turned in on Monday. And I hope this comes across the right way. I was looking at it and I was like, oh, I just love that these kids are so smart. And what I mean by that is we can have such rich conversations. They're fascinated by Adam and Eve. They're fascinated by how could they have made that decision. They're fascinated by what is on offer. What am I called to be? And I just find every day exciting.
Mm-hmm. And then what's it like being around young people and these young women and men who are so captivated by Adam and Eve, like you're saying, and like by these truths? What's it like being able to be present to them?
Oh, it's the greatest privilege. It's the greatest honor. When I had the longer commute when I was living in Stillwater, I would pray. I didn't know how I was going to use that car time. Like, so prayer, obviously. I would pray on my way in, Lord, let me experience many miracles and let me be a part of the ones I don't even get to see. And I try, now that I'm living right here and things seem more quote unquote normal, I try to remember that on the way in of like, I'm not doing the school day. Like, Lord, it can feel that way. Like you've got your routine, you've got your areas of competency, but no, Lord, blow it out of the water. I don't know who should step in my door today. I don't know the word they need. Just move hearts, including my own.
Yeah. So you're teaching a few classes at Providence, but you're there in the building all day. What does a typical day look like for you then?
Excellent. So by the time Sister and I arrive at school, we've already had our morning meditation and our morning prayer at the convent and breakfast where we listen to a reading at table, we say. Right now we're listening to Father Jacob Bertrand and Father Gregory Pine talk about Augustine. And so by the time we get here, we've been very well fed in all ways. I'm usually here by about 7:20. Kids start coming in the door at 7:30. My office is flanked by fantastic colleagues, so it's just great to be in this hallway. There's a ton of traffic. And starting at from about 7:30 to about 8:20, it's kids are in and out, or I'm out in the hallway, or there's a group meeting for something, or I go upstairs to their meeting. So just a lot of in and out until that first bell around 8:20. And then I have that kind of first hour of the day. There might be some meetings with students. There might be some more administrative meetings, or I might be working on something for later. And then I teach kind of the next 2 hours of the morning. And then usually I go to kindergarten lunch around 11:30. I don't make it every day, but I put it in my calendar for every day. And then I pop over to first and second grade too. And then come back on up. I usually have some older kids coming for some discussion during their lunchtime. They come to my office. That's a little bit easier for them. And then the afternoon, like today, I'm going to be in the three first grade classrooms as soon as we get off of this radio show. On other days, it might be hosting a lunch series that the kids want to be a part of, or just supporting all the other great works in the school.
Mm-hmm. What kind of things are these students grappling with?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I mean, first of all, they're fantastic. They're so honest with themselves. It's the whole gamut. Maria Montessori talks about a fourth plane of development. It doesn't get a lot of play in educational spheres, but she says it's the justice plane, right? And that kind of rings true with the teenager, right? Or our own inner teenager that we all still have in us, right? That's not fair. That's not even, the justice plane. But she says that they're going to push and push and push on the foundation you're offering them, because if they find it worthy, they will stand and build their house on it. And that's scriptural, right?
Yeah, build a house on rock.
Yes. And so their pushing is actually a compliment, right? So it could be all the way from a high schooler coming in here to say, my friend said this, 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 and this, and I said this, what would you say? And they're just hashing it out. All the way to students who are just wanting even more faith formation. They're hungry. And so we crack open Thomas Aquinas and we go for it, right? All the way to someone really just wondering if maybe the sufferings that they're experiencing and even the temptations, if that's compatible with being in the church. And if so, what do they do? And of course, my answer always has something to do with, yeah, stay in the church with those struggles. Yes. Yes. Argue with the Lord in the church. Fight with the Lord. Wrestle with the Lord within the sacraments, right? So some conversations are very personal and others are just looking for a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of advice do you have for young adults who are considering faith but don't have family members practicing it, people who don't know where to start?
Oh, what a good question. And do you mean particularly young people like in a high school, or do you mean young adults outside of?
Anywhere. Yeah. Okay. I guess for you, you're in a high school. I guess, yeah, young adults in a high school. Mm-hmm. I know Providence is a Catholic high school, but a lot of times our Catholic schools nowadays, too, are still mission fields.
Oh, absolutely.
Lots of people who aren't Catholic go to Catholic school.
Yeah. So for your question is for young people just who want to know the Lord deeper, like next steps.
Mm-hmm.
It will look as different as there are people and relationships with Christ, but a general principle would be just start to become aware of your inner monologue. So we all have a world in our head, and it is not my job to go in there and mine it and pull things out and fix myself. That's not the spiritual life. But just give yourself enough taste of silence and solitude that you know the tape that's always, you know, or the podcast, I guess now, that's always playing in your head, right? And then start to do some substitution work. So maybe you can't quiet that voice or that influence, but could you tune in to that Pints with Aquinas, right? Mm-hmm. Could you read that book? There's just so much traffic, in a sense, storming at our young people, more than even for the adults.
Yeah.
I think just to start slowly taking in different worlds, because we're formed by what we think. And Aristotle said that too, right? Like, tell me what a man does and I'll tell you what he loves. Mm-hmm. And so what we think and what we love comes out in our actions. So start to kind of replace some of those influences if you can. Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Sister, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and tell us a little bit about your story and your ministry. It's been so great to have you.
Thank you. And thank you for having this show and all you're doing for the new evangelization.
Oh, you as well. Up next, we're sharing a few upcoming events that offer space for prayer, reflection, and a real renewal.
The Family Rosary Across America.
I love doing the rosary at night because it puts me in contact with real people who have real needs and hopes and dreams and sufferings. Or it's real.
Real prayers, real families, all together in real time.
It's unchoreographed, all right? It's natural. It's happening live. Anyone can be part of it. It's not too sophisticated. And you never know what's going to happen, right? And that's what prayer is in families. Life happens. And sometimes there's joyful reports and sometimes there's heartbreaking reports. You know, it was Our Lady at Fatima, Our Lady at Lourdes who prayed the rosary for the conversion of sinners. It was Our Lady and Our Lady of Champion who said pray for the conversion of sinners. That's what we're doing. Give people a little bit of hope or a little bit of companionship. You know, there's a lot of lonely people out there, a lot of suffering people. And we're going to make sure that they're not forgotten and they're not irrelevant. At Relevant Radio, everyone's relevant.
The Family Rosary Across America with Father Rocky. 7 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
I keep searching for answers.
It's only been probably about a year or so since I've listened to your show. I've learned so much from you. Thank you for helping me just grow my faith.
The Patrick Madrid Show.
I always enjoy listening to you, and my faith is always grown by your wisdom and understanding of our faith.
Your show is so informative and so helpful, so I just want to say thank you for that.
Have a question about the faith?
The Patrick Madrid Show.
8 a.m. Central on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
time to hear all of the great events that we have going on this week. Father Tom and I are joined by Rachel McCallum, our producer, and Paul Sadek, our technical producer. As Yay. Always, want to kick it off, Paul?
Yes, yes, ma'am. They say that the Catholic faith is filled with smells and bells, and here's one that takes that theme up. Franciscan Retreats and Spirituality Center in Prior Lake is hosting a Wednesday Lenten series called Discovering the Meaning of Lent, Signs and Symbols, with guided prayer, personal reflection, and time set aside to enter more deeply into the season. The next event is coming up Wednesday, February 18th.
If you want Wednesday.
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah. It is. And if you want to find out more, head over to the website, archspm.org/events. That's Wednesday, February 18th. The next Discovering the Meaning of Lent, Signs and Symbols at Franciscan Retreats in Prior Lake.
Well, so speaking of how wonderful signs and symbols are, the putting of ashes on the forehead is one of those very graphic experiences. A lot of people don't realize it's not a holy day of obligation.
That's right. Yeah. I always go in to get my ashes. Yeah.
Right. People want the sign and symbol as well. We should.
Yeah. And you don't even actually have to be Catholic to get ashes.
That's exactly right.
Oh, really?
Or have received your first communion, your little babies at the breast to get ashed.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't know that at all. Well, you won't want to miss this married couples retreat that's coming up from February 13th through the 15th. Couples are invited to the Franciscan Retreats and Spirituality Center in Prior Lake for a weekend to deepen both their marriage and their faith through prayer, reflection, and time together. As always, you can learn more by visiting archspm.org/events. That's taking place February 13th through the 15th at the Franciscan Retreats and Spirituality Center in Prior Lake. I should really tell my sister about that event. She got married last weekend, so that might be a good retreat for her and her fiance.
Any time in the marriage, that would be good, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Both of those are happening at the Franciscan Retreat Center, Prior Lake.
They've got a lot of stuff going on this Lent.
Yeah, they sure do. Well, the next event here is not going to happen there, but the same day, February 11th, from 7 to 8 p.m., it's an opportunity for you to virtually log into an experience of the Diocese of Kitui, Kenya. As you may well know, that diocese is a sister diocese of our own Archdiocese, St. Paul, Minneapolis. And there will be an informational session by the 2026 delegation trip to Kitui, Kenya. So you can interact with those who were in Kitui, Kenya, and just learn from them what that was like. And you can see some of their presentations during this virtual meeting, Wednesday, February 11th from 7 to 8 p.m. You can find more information at archspm.org/events.
Sounds fascinating to me.
Yeah. I've never been to Africa.
No, neither have I.
Neither. Yeah.
They've been our sister diocese since, or partner diocese maybe is the phrasing that we use, since like 2007, I think. So there's been every 3 years delegation trips. I know there was delegates here from Kenya over the summer, and it was such a warm week in May. And I remember that some of them were still wearing their coats because it was just still cold for them. Like, the sun just is not as warm.
It was below 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah.
Right.
It was crazy. Well, next week we've got Sarah Kostick. She'll be joining us to explore the importance of wonder and how cultivating humility and openness can deepen our pursuit of knowledge. And we'll also be having on Pat and Kenna Millay, who are founders of the Martin Center for Integration. And they'll be sharing their experiences with Ascension's Crux, a Lenten journey of surrender, which is a spiritual practice they're actively engaging in this upcoming Lenten season.
Well, very good. Our parish is participating in the Crux book as well.
Yeah. I haven't heard about it. It's a great conversation.
Yeah,
this was the first I had heard too, so I'll have to look into it.
Father, will you close us in a blessing?
The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
May Almighty God bless all of you listeners, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you for listening to Practicing Catholic on Relevant Radio 1330. Practicing Catholic is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. To listen to past shows, find us wherever you get your podcasts. And stay connected with us. Visit our website, practicingcatholicshow.com, or follow us on social media at Practicing Catholic Show. We'll be back again next week.